Take your Bibles, please, and turn to John chapter 9. John chapter 9, I really, really like this section of John 9, this section of John with this blind man. I will, if I can't finish it in time for Christmas, I will actually do Christmas sermons. But I looked at the calendar and I thought, there's still two Sundays before Christmas. Surely you'll be able to pardon me if I go ahead and continue in John chapter 9. We are in verses 7 through 34, and it's a central passage in our discussions about what does a person need to do to receive everlasting life. And so what we're going to do is just go through the story here this morning, and we're going to find out what kinds of things people didn't know. So the first thing we find here in verses 7 through 12 is what the blind man didn't know. Now you'll remember from last Sunday that what Christ did was spit on the ground and make clay and smear it on his eyes and told him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And he came back. And he was, when he washed his eyes, he was able to see, and he came back seeing. So this is an incredible miracle that Christ did on the Sabbath. And the problem here is not just that he healed on the Sabbath, but as you go through the narrative, what really got the Pharisees upset was that he made clay. He made some clay out of those spit that he put on the ground. So you'll see as we go through the story, the blind man doesn't have any compunction about telling people what took place. He made clay and put it on my eyes. But when he tells the story to the Pharisees, he leaves that part out, okay? He doesn't want to tell the Pharisees that he made something on the Sabbath because that's what they're all upset. Everybody knows what's going on here anyway. So, you know, one of those situations where everybody knows, but nobody wants to talk. So we're in verses 8 through 34. What the blind man didn't know, verse 8. Therefore, the countrymen, the neighbors, the people that knew him well, and the ones seeing him previously, so these would know who he was, but not have the exchanges with him. That blind man, they knew that he had been previously blind. They were saying, is this not the one sitting and begging? So the people who knew him, they're confused. He had been sitting in a specific spot and begging. And here he was able to see. Verse 9. But some were saying, this is he, but others, this is someone like him. And the blind man, that one, the blind man saying, I am he. So there's this big discussion about whether this is actually the same guy. And so, well, no, it's just somebody who looks just like him. And no, it's somebody else. So he's jumping up and down happily, knowing exactly who he is and what's happened to him. And I am he. I am the man who was born blind, who was sitting there and was begging, and I'm seeing for the first time in my life. I don't know if you've seen these videos of children. We've come and been able to do some marvelous things with auditory issues. Children who are born deaf, and they're able to be fitted with contraptions now, and they hear their mother's voice for the first time. Heartwarming stuff to look in the amazement and wonder. Just imagine somebody that was born blind, and then all of a sudden now he's seeing colors for the first time, seeing anything. I had a friend in college who was blind, an Indian young man. He wasn't young when I met him. He was in his 40s, but he had lost his sight as a result of beatings that he received in India from individuals that his parents had hired to actually kill him. he had converted to Christianity. The missionary gave him a Gospel of John, and he read it and believed in Jesus. And his parents wanted to persuade him to abandon Christianity. So they beat him into a bloody pulp and left him for dead, as the people they hired. And a missionary actually took him in and nursed him back to health. But as a result of that, he lost his sight. I made friends with him at Bible college because I wanted to find out his story. He was an older person there studying in North America. His English was really quite good. But I remember going into his room, you know, I'd knock on his door and open, you know, he'd say, come in. And I'd open the door and the light was always off. You know, the room was dark. And it took some getting used to. Why is the room dark? Well, because his world is dark. Everything is dark. There is no light. He can't see. And so here's this fellow who's never seen the light of day from the day that he was born. And now all of a sudden he is seeing marvelously. And I'm, you know, he's just really excited to tell his story about it. So there's a division, verse 10. So they were saying to him, how were your eyes opened? And the way the text reads here is kind of cool. They are having this multiple conversation. It's not enough for one person to ask him. A bunch of people are asking him over again. And he said, he answered and said, verse 11, a man being called Jesus made clay and smeared my eyes and said to me, go unto the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. And then he has two participles here. And having gone and having washed, I gained my sight. I gained sight. Therefore they said to him, where is that one, this one who told you to do these things? And he's saying, I don't know. So what the blind man doesn't know is where Jesus is. In verses 13 through 17, we'll find out what the Pharisees didn't know. So the blind man didn't know where Jesus is. Now what's the Pharisees? What do you think they don't know? Let's look at verse 13. They are bringing him to the Pharisees, face to face with the Pharisees. These countrymen, these people who knew and had heard his story, and no one has ever heard of somebody having been born without eyesight, all of a sudden seeing. This is phenomenal. So let's go to the religious rulers and get a theological explanation about what's happened. So that's the reason why they're doing this. They are bringing him to the Pharisees, that one who was formerly blind. Now, it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay. That's the problem here. He made something. He broke the law. And you'll see here the insanity of the Pharisees. Do any of you all listen to Ben Shapiro? Anybody know who is? All right, several of you. He has a movement where he's trying to convert young people, millennials primarily, into conservative way of thinking. He is taking pot shots, well-written, well-thought, reasoned attacks against the prevailing worldview of our next generation, which is primarily socialism and gender determination by how one feels on the day that they wake up. He's well worth listening to on YouTube if you want some critical thinking skills. But this recently I listened to him argue with a socialist, a young man, who was arguing that the people who put the pencils together at the factory should receive equal pay with the people that own the factory because they are putting equal work into the factory. So without these people who are assembling the erasers and putting lead in the pencils, you could not produce pencils. So therefore, they should have the same profit from the sale of pencils as the people who own the factory. Socialism. And Ben Shapiro goes through the logic of the faulty logic of the fellow. What does the guy have outside the gate of the factory when this process started? He has absolutely nothing. He's out there fiddling with his hands. He has nothing to do. Once he goes into the factory, now he has something to do for which he is paid. If the factory closes down and he's returned back outside the gate, what risk was there to him? Nothing. He was doing nothing before. He was paid for what he did, and then he returned to doing nothing. And he's also assuming, this young man who's making this argument, that the people who have the factory did no work and took no risk to obtain all of the equipment and all of the property and all of the materials and everything to put together an opportunity for this guy. So he just goes through the fallacy of the logic of socialism that was presented in this college forum by a young socialist. What was interesting to me is that there was no movement in thinking on the part of the one who had asked the question. And this is most of the issues that are addressed, the ones that I'm watching anyway. The questions are absolutely answered spectacularly, historically, consistently, logically. He's a very good thinker. Do you think it changes the asker of the question? Not a chance. Because what happens at the end of having been refuted in their logical error, it ends up coming back to a moral issue that they want to do something that shouldn't be done, especially if you listen to the gender determination discussions. What you have with the Pharisees here is that they are willfully refusing to understand and accept what is right in front of them. It's the same kind of thing that you see today in our own culture, in our own society. So what the Pharisees didn't know, what they didn't know was how a sinner can work such a miracle. That's what they didn't know. Let's look at this together. Therefore, verse 15, Therefore, the Pharisees were asking him. The again in verse 15 doesn't refer to the second time the Pharisees are interviewing him, but the again refers back to the neighbors who had asked him. So he went through his routine and explained what happened to the neighbors and his countrymen, and now he's going to do it again with the Pharisees. Therefore, the Pharisees were asking him again, how did you gain eyesight? And he said to them, clay he put on my eyes. Notice he left out the made part. Clay he put on my eyes, and I washed myself, and I'm seeing. Present tense, I'm seeing. Therefore, some of the ones out of the Pharisees were saying, this man is not from God because he's not keeping the Sabbath. So the conclusion is, Jesus isn't from God because he broke the Sabbath. And they probably picked up on what the neighbors were saying on the verb about he made clay, violating their Pharisaic tradition. But others were saying, how is it possible a sinner man to do such signs? And a division was among them. They are saying to the blind men again, what are you saying concerning him? Because he opened your eyes. And he said, he's a prophet. So what the Pharisees couldn't figure out is how someone like Jesus, a sinner who does not keep the law, could work such a miracle. Now let's look at the parents and find out what the parents, I think, pretended not to know. Parents know everything. don't they? You hardly get away with anything with parents. But the parents here, let's see what they don't know in verses 18 to 23. Therefore the Jews did not believe concerning him. This is a good illustration, a secular illustration of what it means to believe. Were they convinced by the blind man? His story was that Jesus put clay on his eyes, sent him off to wash. He washed, and he could see. That was his testimony. Did he convince the Jews? Were they convinced that what he said was true? Not at all. It says in verse 18 that the Jews did not believe him, what he had to say. That he was blind, was being blind, and gained eyesight. So that's their problem. They wouldn't believe him. Now, what do they do? Verse 18, until whenever they sent for his parents of the one having received sight, and they asked them, saying, is this your son whom you, emphatic, are saying that he was being born blind? Therefore, how now is he seeing? So they don't believe the blind man, so they go and they grab the parents and haul them into this jurisdiction and inquire of them, is this your son, and how did he come to see? They want to hear it from the parents. Pretty interesting how they respond to this. Verse 20, now his parents answered them and said, we know that he is our son. Yep, check. This is our son. And that he was born blind. So this is our son, and he was born blind. But how at this time he sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is having maturity. He has years. Ask him. Concerning himself, he will speak. So the parents, they play a little side shuffle. You know, yes, he's our son. Yes, he was born blind. And that's all we're going to own up to. Why would they do that? Clearly, they had more knowledge. John answers that in verses 22 and 23. These things they said, his parents, because they were fearing the Jews. For the Jews had previously agreed, in order that, this is the purpose of their agreement, if anyone should confess him as Messiah, they would be synagogue banished. Because of this, the immediately preceding understanding that apparently they published this, that if anyone wants to name Jesus as the Messiah, fine, but you can't be a part of the synagogue, you'll be banished from the synagogue. Because of this, his parents said, he's having age, he knows he's an adult, ask him. So what the parents didn't know, or at least pretended not to know, was how he was healed. And the reason they didn't want to state how he was healed, I'm sure he told them, I'm sure everybody told him. This is a citywide event. Because the Pharisees, the Jews, had already decided you could not believe in Jesus and confess him as the Messiah and be in the synagogue. You'd be banished from the synagogue. So now let's look at the blind man here in the last verses 24 through 34. What the blind man knew and then what he was compelled to testify. Verse 24. Therefore they summoned him again a second time, the man who was born blind. So he was put out of the inquiry, the judicial inquiry, and they bring him back in. And they said to him, verse 24, give glory to God. This is a formula. You see this in a number of different places. 1 Samuel 6, probably what comes to mind most readily would be Joshua 7, verse 19. when Moses examines Achan. Nope, Joshua examines Achan concerning the problems they had at Ai after the victory of Jericho. And he says, give God the glory. This is a formula that they're putting this man under in a judicial trial where they are requiring him to testify the truth. So we'd say, now, before God, tell the truth. That's the same kind of thing. Sometimes when I have students in my office and I already know the answers to the questions that I'm going to ask, I help them. I say to them, this would be a very good time not to lie to me. This would be a very good time for you to tell the truth. I already know the answers. Okay? They don't know that I already know the answers, but they should know that this is a really good time to tell me the truth. I have been lied to by the best, just so you know it. Happens to me all the time. And a lot of times it blows right by me. So give God glory. We know that this man is a sinner. That's their premise. This man is a sinner. Therefore, verse 25, that one, the blind man, the previously blind man, that one answered and said, if he is a sinner, I do not know. So they want to him to testify that Jesus is a sinner under oath. He says, I don't know if he is or not. That's outside of my responsibility. I do know that one thing for sure, one thing I know that being blind, now I see. So what he is absolutely certain about him is that at one point I was blind and now I see. Whether Jesus is a sinner or not, he doesn't want to discuss that because that's their problem, not his. Verse 26, now they said to him again, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? So they've already received their testimony once, right? And he answered them, I told you already, and you didn't listen. Why then are you wanting to hear me tell this again? You are not desiring to become his disciples as well, are you? it's a negative question. So he turns this thing back on the Pharisees and says, why do you want me to tell you again? Do you want to become his disciples as well? That's a negative. They aren't going to do that. Verse 28. They verbally abused him. With this, they began to assail him and verbally attack him and said, you are the disciple of that one. They didn't even want to say Jesus' names, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses. Now this one, we don't even know where he's from. We don't know where Jesus is from. The man, the blind man, the previously blind man, answered and said to them, so these religious rulers who know Jesus is a sinner and they cannot tell where he's from, that is he coming from God or his own work? He challenges them in verse 30 after they've verbally attacked them. For in this answer, that they could not tell whether Christ's power came from God or not. This is an amazing thing that you do not know where he is from. It's amazing that there's a religious rulers, you can't figure out where he is, where he's from. And he has opened my eyes. So you don't understand and you don't know anything about Jesus, whether he's from God or whether he's not. And yet he's opened my eyes. Now we know that sinners, God does not hear. But if anyone should be a worshiper and should do God's wishes, this one God hears. From the ages in perpetuity past, It has never been heard that anyone has opened the eyes of one having been born blind. Verse 33. If this one were not from God, he would not be able to do anything. So this man's conclusion is, this guy is from God, and my eyes are the proof. They answered and said to him, verse 34, you've been wholly and completely born in sins, and you're teaching us? So they dismiss his argument based on his birth, that he was born blind, and they cast him out of the synagogue. Now, what the blind man knew and was compelled to testify, what do we find in this passage that the blind man knew? Well, he knew it was Jesus, verse 11, a prophet, verse 17, the Messiah, verse 22, who has disciples, verse 22, a worshiper who does God's will, verse 31, someone whom God hears, verse 31, and that he is from God. So what the blind man has figured out so far is that this Jesus is a prophet, he's the Messiah, who does God's will, who God hears, and his origin is from God. What do we learn about the Pharisees? We learn that the Pharisees are willful unbelievers. So my sermon title, The People We Lose, what's taking place in this chapter is that the blind man never had any desire or intention to leave Judaism or to leave the Jews. Neither did his parents. He had no intentions, but something happened to him. What happened to him was that he was introduced to the person of Jesus Christ. Through this miraculous healing, this blind man came to understand and believe that Jesus is the prophet and a Messiah who does God's will. And when he became convinced of that, when he believed that, that put him into conflicts, and the result of those conflicts was that he was put out of the synagogue. He lost that contact. The central part of the Jewish existence revolved around the synagogue, the feasts, the worship, the fellowship. Everything was within that camp, so to speak. In Hebrews 13, as the author concludes his book, he argues to the readers that they should leave the camp. They should lose the safety, the security of the Jewish fold with all of its priesthood, with all of its ostentatious worship, with its high music, with its excellent, beautiful art. They should leave that and go outside of the camp to the Messiah who was crucified outside of Jerusalem. They should leave and go to him, because that now is where God is and where life can be found. We lose people in our lives when we gain Christ. That is a reality of walking with the Lord. Let's pray.